soon as I'll be able to play, and he does, you know, he'll just play some of us.
It will, we'll call the meeting to order. We're on teleconference. And present we have with us today Senator Collins, Senator Cotton, Representative Ulmer, Judge Stewart. If anyone on the teleconference could also announce their presence.
This is Alicia Thompson from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Marjorie, are you there in Anchorage?
This is the Anchorage Bridge Operator. Marjorie has gone offline and will be back on in a few minutes.
Okay, we'll proceed, and if you can let us know when she comes back on. Everyone have an agenda in front of them? Is the agenda acceptable to everyone?
I have an agenda here in Fairbanks, thank you.
Great, do you have any changes to the agenda? Okay, is the agenda acceptable?
Chairman, query, do we know the disposition of Mr. Tater?
He is out of town because he's on a, he wasn't on the floor today, he was excused.
All right.
Let's proceed on the first advisory opinion. It's a request put in by Shirley Armstrong, Josh Fink, Mark Riley, and Janet Sykes. And they're all friends of mine, so I. And the request was for a open hearing. I assume there's no objection from any committee members to holding the hearing open.
No objection.
Materials before us include the draft advisory opinion from Terry Kramer, who's with us today, our ethics counsel, and a letter with attachments from the people filing the request for the advisory opinion.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we ought to ask Ms. Kramer to take a seat at the table where she can be on the microphone in the event.
Great, I think that'd be fine. Terry, if you could join us, that'd be helpful. Alicia, do you have all those materials I described?
Yes, I have all the documents. I'd just like to add that whoever was speaking, I can't hear. I can hear you, but I can't hear whoever the other gentleman was that made a comment before you started to speak.
I apologize. I didn't turn on the mic.
We'll do our best to handle the mics. So Terry Kramer has joined us. I think everyone's had a chance to look at the materials. We do have some of the people who asked for the advisory opinion with us today. I suppose the first step is to see if there's any questions from any committee members to those requesters of the opinion. Does any committee members have any questions they'd like to ask about the facts of this case?
I just want to be sure, Mr. Chairman, about my understanding of the circumstances. It's indicated in the material that these people paid for the tickets out of their own pockets. Are they able to apply to the state for compensation for that travel, or is it strictly on their own?
I'll offer an answer since it's just general knowledge within the legislature. The legislators get their travel paid to the session, legislators and their family, but legislative aides don't. I don't know of any exception that exists. Are you aware of any exception like this?
I'm not aware of any exception.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's probably just a technical thing, but there were some staff that I understand came down on the ferry that had free tickets, and as a result, they aren't going to be reimbursed.
They were traveling on a transportation request.
Yeah, they were traveling on a legislator's TR.
But I'm thinking of the people that paid out of their own pockets. They're not going to be able to apply for some additional refund. It's purely a technical question because I assume it's clear that if they did, they would have to credit what they already got.
And there's Terry addressed that in her original memo, stating that for a person who does have state reimbursement coming to them, which I think there may or may not have been a legislator on through Travis, that in those cases that they would be required just under separate law to reimburse the state so that they wouldn't be receiving a double reimbursement, essentially. Is there any questions anyone wants to ask of Ms. Creamer?
Mr. Chair, this is Lori McNeil. We had a question about the fence, which may not be able to be answered. Has the city in the past reimbursed or given any kind of rebate to people who've suffered this kind of problem, this regular passengers, summer tourists, anything like that?
That does seem to be a pretty important question. Terry, do you have any idea on that?
When I prepared the initial opinion, not for the committee, I did talk to John Halterman with the ferry system. He indicated that there is not a written policy about this kind of compensation for that kind of experience on the ferries, but that from time to time they do make arrangements for people whose plans have been severely discombobulated by experiences on the ferry. It's not regular, and it's very much an ad hoc basis. At least that's my understanding from talking with him.
Senator Cobb?
And I ought to disclose that one of the people listed here is a staff member of mine, and I've talked about this with her, so hopefully I didn't violate any rules here. But she pointed out to me that another circumstance in a transportation situation, an airplane ticket was given to her when she had a complaint against an airline. So it isn't like she has a major history of complaining, but apparently it was a big mix-up with an airline, and the airline was able to, you know, compensate her in not exactly the same way, but a similar fashion.
I had an experience which many of us have had, which somewhat reflects on this case, which was with an airline where you get bumped, which happens, you know, all over the country every day, and they, you know, the standard procedure, they give you a alternate transportation to your destination on the first available flight, and they give you another free ticket to wherever they go, which in the case of the flight I went was worth, you know, quite a bit of money, maybe $1,000, and I didn't report it, or I didn't turn it down, though. I think there's probably quite a few facts like that. Any other questions for Ms. Creamer?
I'm not quite sure I understand, because I didn't go back and read opinion 89-3. A comment on page 3 of your memorandum of January 13th. In a previous formal advisory near the top, formal advisory opinion 89-3, the Ethics Committee clarified the application of the prohibition in B against gifts, $50 or more, and the general statement in A. General statement in A is something that's pointed to, as I understand, by the claimants here, that their claim is it cannot reasonably be inferred that the gift is intended to influence the performance of official duties, actions, or judgments. And I'm not sure how that relates to the interpretation that we gave in 89-3.
Terry, do you have in front of you the 89-3 opinion? Or?
No, I don't have it in front of me, no. I remember from reading it generally what the facts were.
Okay, if you need a copy, we have one here.
89-3 concerned the receipt by a legislator, I believe, anyway, so uncovered by the code, of a gift on retiring from service on a board. And it was worth more than $50, so apparently the prohibition against accepting gifts applied. It did not fall within the hospitality kinds of exceptions that are listed in subsection C, or discount. So a narrow reading of the code would have made it improper to accept that gift. But the advisory opinion, the committee read the general requirement in subsection A about influence into the absolute prohibition that's stated in subsection B about gifts worth $50 or more, and said that in that instance, because it was clear that the past relationship between the giver, the corporation, and the recipient was what generated the gift. It didn't have anything to do with the legislator's status as a member of the legislature, that the gift was accepted.
And then I guess my next question would be, why does this not come within, why is this not excluded because of that language in A? Why is it to be inferred that this gift is in any way intended to influence the performance of official duty?
In preparing that initial opinion, which was on my own authority, not with the advice of the committee, I read the code narrowly and I read the advisory opinion narrowly. It went to the existence of a positive, a present relationship. It wasn't the absence
because
of
they still are employees, you mean?
Because the ferry system doesn't owe them any loyalty for their past service to the ferry system, or doesn't. And so the earlier, the 89 advisory opinion, talked about the nature of a relationship that justified the gift. Here there's an absence of a relationship other than having bought transportation. So I didn't feel that on my own authority I could extend that exception.
Senator Cotton and Representative
Walton. Mr. Chairman, we've got these draft advisory opinions in front of us, and so I've read those two, and I've read your opinion, Terry. And I guess what I get finally down to is in subsection C of the law, C2 allows discounts that are generally available to the public or to a large class of persons to which the person belongs. And you say that these people don't belong to a large class of persons, and our one advisory opinion says they do belong to a large class of persons, so therefore the discount or the renegotiated fare, however you want to describe it, was available to a group of people similarly situated. And whether or not, I think it just comes down to whether or not they are a large class of persons. And you say they are not a large class of persons, and we could, another opinion could be that they are a large class of persons. So is there any detail on the definition of large that we can discuss here?
It certainly has not been examined in other advisory opinions. I think it's up to the committee to decide what it believes that to mean and how extensive, and whether an after-the-fact check is a discount. And you can certainly hold however you want to on the reading of either of those issues.
I guess, the point about being after the fact, of course it was after the fact. How else could it have been? They couldn't have known that it was going to be an interrupted term, so.
The point I was making is whether discount was intended to encompass this kind of situation or whether the code simply failed to, as it has on occasion, look at what situations in real life are going to arise and therefore doesn't address this kind of situation. And that's certainly something that I'm very comfortable having this body decide and not so comfortable deciding on my own.
I just note before Representative Oliver, I don't think there's, from what I understand, I don't think Terry's attempting to defend the particular opinion she didn't have before, for instance, the January 17th letter. And so there's a variety of facts that weren't available to her at the time. I think it's just the normal role of this committee to reinterpret these things based on the broader things. I'm not sure she'd come to any other conclusion than what she did. So, Representative Oliver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, my point was very similar. On the original memo that Terry did for us on the final page, it indicates because the rebate is offered only to those who purchase their own tickets and not to those traveling on TRs, I do not think it falls within the exception of paragraph 2 for discounts available to a public or large class of persons. I guess that's where I differ. it only been offered to legislative employees, then I think that'd be a problem. But given that it was offered to all of the traveling public, except those whose way was being paid by the state, it seems to me to fall in number two's exception. As Terry indicates in her final paragraph, I would note that the Ethics Committee may read the exception in paragraph two for discounts more broadly than I do, in which case the receipt of the rebate would not be a violation of the Ethics Code. And I think that's really the heart of the matter here for us today. Do we read it more broadly than her first opinion? As for myself, I do read it more broadly because I do think it falls within number two discounts that are generally available. And although, granted, the ferry system does not provide this to everybody who has ever delayed or inconvenienced, it has in the past, on occasion, and in this occasion, offered it to everybody who traveled. So for me, I think number two is the exception to the rule and why I do not find it a violation of the Ethics Code.
Alicia or Margie, do you have any questions or comments you'd want to offer this time?
This is Alicia Thompson, Fairbanks. Yes, I've read through all the material, and I tend to agree with the number two exception, and I favor version A. The facts from January 6th, this boat took off, and the voyage didn't end until the 13th. It was like a voyage into the Twilight Zone. Considering that, in favor of version A.
I agree with Representative Ulmer.
Version A satisfy your view of how this should be acted upon?
Mr. Chairman, the only problem I have with version A is on the second page, the sentence that says the change in destination was made to accommodate the transportation needs of the local communities and of a local basketball team. I think that understates the safety hazard posed by proceeding on the original routing, given what the marine highway system here in Juneau knew about the weather conditions. I would not feel comfortable with approving it without indicating, either in that sentence or in an additional sentence, that the ferry system was trying to protect not only the safety of the persons on the ferry, but also the safety of the ship itself, because they were approaching 36-foot seas had they continued. So with that exception, I have no problems with the opinion.
I'm a little afraid to get into the area of determining the facts as to what caused the turnaround of the ferry, because we'd have to drag in some of the ferry people and things. I mean, your point is well taken, Representative Ulmer, and I think probably there's an element of both, of safety and there's existing scheduling. I think the alleged facts in the January 17th letter to us, indicated information on the other side. And I think it may go beyond our ability to try to sort those out. And no one suggested that it affects the results of this advisory opinion.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I would not have any objections to removing that sentence or the next sentence, which I also think is quite misleading, given the fact that the captain of the Tustamina had not been given the full information about the weather due to problems of communications between shore and ship. But, if you want to take all of that out, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, I move we delete... the language beginning with the change on page 2 in the fourth line and down to the sentence beginning at Cordova.
Is the motion has been made to remove the sentence. Is there any objection? No objection to those sentences removed. The only comment I'd offer on this is that, there certainly is no experience out there that indicates that the strategy the ferry chose to use in dealing with unhappy passengers or passengers put into a tough situation is significantly different than what's done in the private industry. In this case, certainly any implication of attempt to influence the legislature would be much more severe if it was Mark Air or some carrier that's trying to get benefits from the state in one form or another. We don't have that here. But even if it had been Mark Air, it's clearly on the record that airlines have a policy of giving these kind of rebates, or whatever you want to call them, for these kind of travel stoppages. And half of a fare doesn't seem to be severe. It's certainly in the ballpark of what's offered in private industry. I guess that's my own thoughts. Any other thoughts on version A, which seems to be what we're talking about the most now?
I move we adopt version A of the advisory opinion 92-1 draft.
Judge Stowers, move the advisory opinion number A. Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Chairman, I would just note that on page 3, the second paragraph, the decision to reroute the testamina was taken to accommodate other transportation needs raises the same sort of concern. And I would say that the decision to reroute the testamina was taken by the Alaska Marine Highway System without reference to the wishes. I would just delete that small phrase. So I just move the deletion of to accommodate other transportation needs and.
Objection.
Okay, is there any objection, committee? Hearing none, so ordered. So the motion is before us from Judge Stewart. Any last comments from Marjorie or Alicia?
This is Alicia. I have no further comments.
Okay, thank you. If there's no other comments from the committee, is there objection to the motion? Okay, hearing no, so ordered. Next thing before us is the advisory opinion number two. We're going to have to conduct it in executive session because the law requires that. So we will, though, have later items on the agenda.
Chairman, I wonder for the convenience of our guest from the Division of Audit, if we might change the agenda, accommodate that, and then come back to it.
Sure, I don't have any objections. Anyone have an objection to that change the agenda? Great. Well, if you could join us, we could proceed to that. We're now on the third item on the agenda. No, we're not going to that yet. I think we're most of us familiar with this process. Do both of our members on teleconference have the materials on the legislative budget and audit?
I have a complete package of everything that's going to be discussed on the agenda.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Earl Jensen. I'm Ann Shoemaker with the Division of Legislative Audit. I know the committee is short of time, so I'll make this short and sweet. We're basically here to ask for a retroactive approval of the list of loans and programs that we put out in a questionnaire that was sent out by the middle of January to all employees and legislatures in order to comply with the February 1 and February 15 deadline. For some reason, we get out of sync every year, and we did this last year, too. We would appreciate it if the committee would retroactively approve the list of B1 and B2 loans and programs that we designated with the assistance of legislative legal services and attachment 1 and 2 of the paperwork that was sent to the committee members. I believe that was January 17th. If there's any questions, I can summarize this real fast. If there's one B2 or highly discretionary program in the field here, and that is under AEA. Let's see, where is it? Yeah, first one. Yes, it's the top first program in attachment 2. It deals with electrical service extension grant program. We feel that's highly discretionary because this program is to provide grants to certified electrical utilities, and there has to be a determination made that deals with cost benefit of a particular certified utility, and we feel that's somewhat discretionary. The rest of the programs that we have added this year, we feel are of a non-discretionary or regulatory type programs and loans, and we're recommending that those
one, my memory is sort of failing me on what we did last fall. Maybe Senator Collins can remind me, or you can. I thought we, for the next year's list, not this list, the next year's list, we decided to try to whittle it down to some degree. If you could just remind me of the staff set.
Mr. Chairman, my apologies. I was going to mention that. The former ethics counselor recommended that a lot of the regulatory type programs be eliminated. We were, during that period, of which was approximately October of last year, we were, Legislative Audit is in the process of collecting and updating their programs and loan booklets from all the agencies. As a result of that, we felt we would really confuse the agencies if we, in fact, went out with a second letter after they had done a lot of this work and said, you know, wait, stop, we don't mean that, we mean this now. So we went ahead with on our own, I guess, and determined that it'd be best from that point of view to go ahead and follow through this routine one more time, with the idea of coming back in March, maybe your next couple meetings here, working with Terry, coming back with some recommendations to whittle this down. We're in full support of this. It's going to cut a lot, eliminate a lot of our work.
Great, thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? Is there a motion to approve this list?
So moved.
Mr. made the motion to approve the list retroactively. Is there any discussion or objections? Hearing none, so done. Thank you very much for taking the time today to join us. The next item is advisory opinion number 2, which is going to be executive session. I suppose, Alicia and Margie, you have to clear your rooms as well. I don't know who's in your rooms, but...
I may have a 1-year-old in my room, but I can't clear now, but I don't think that's a risk.
All right, I suppose we'll just ignore that. Okay, Senator Collins has made the motion to accept the advisory opinion as amended. Is there objection to that motion? Hearing none, so done. We don't really have anything else on the agenda, but it is a chance for any committee members to bring up anything they want the committee to be doing. Senator Cotton.
During the executive session, we discussed this piece of paper that you handed out. It is staff confidential. It's also marked FYI for your information. Now, does that mean that this will come up at a later meeting?
I think, Terry can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this falls in the category of informal advice that persons covered by the Ethics Act request from legal counsel. The reason the previous item came before us is that the requester went the further step and asked for an opinion from us.
I see.
But if we had any objection, we could then give advice to Terry on that matter. But having no objections, then nothing, no action is necessary. Is that correct, Terry?
Yes, it is.
Any further discussion or items that any committee member wants to bring up at this time? We don't get many chances for meetings unless such a complaint, so it's hard to pass up a chance to have one.
Well, if I could, we may have to go back into executive sessions. I got a question about this.
Okay. Senator Cotton's raised a question on January 20th, since they're just going
to
print it up. But
it's really hard
we address
to measure
properly.
And
our
my
policy.
Thought is just to reduce the possibility of a problem that we all have to deal with. And
any other final comments?
Suggestions?
So if nothing else to come before the committee, then we're adjourned. Thank you all for coming today.